Blog Talk Radio.
And it's Talking Sports with Mike T here with you for the next half hour up until 12:30 in the afternoon. Gorgeous mid-August day here in New York. Lots to talk about. Obviously, the Olympics are over. The U.S. basketball team wins the gold medal in a pretty interesting game against Spain. A lot of back and forth. Durant, the unofficial, I think, MVP of the Olympics, since they don't give one out, setting the record for most points in a single Olympic with 156 points, eclipsing the previous mark, which was set by Charles Barkley in 92. You look at the year LeBron James has had, NBA MVP, Finals MVP, winning the Finals, and now he's got a gold medal on top of it. That's a pretty good year. That's a pretty good year if you're LeBron James, coming off what probably was the worst year of his career last year. So you look at that and how, to me, this game changed. Yeah, it was a close game throughout. Pau Gasol really took over in the third quarter, kept Spain in it. But the inability for them to use Marc Gasol because he was stupidly left in the second quarter and got four fouls, which is one away from fouling out in Olympic international style basketball, is, to me, changed the whole game. To me, that changed the whole game because they had a great first half from Juan Carlos Navarro. They really didn't get anything out of Calderon. But look at what Marc Gasol did when he was in the game. He was 8 out of 10 in this game. 8 out of 10. That's better than what Pau Gasol shot. It's better than what Navarro shot. Better than Rudy Fernandez. Marc Gasol being in that game changes the game. He doesn't look for his shot. He gets shots that are given to him. Pau Gasol is a guy that'll look for a shot. I don't believe that the people who say, oh, well, then Pau Gasol wouldn't have scored 17 points in the third quarter. I tend to disagree. I think he still would have, but I think it would have given more opportunities on the defensive end for them to stop the Americans or stop second chance points, get offensive rebounds maybe. I think it was a big move. I think it was a really big move that the Spanish coach left Marc Gasol in the game. And then you saw in the third quarter, they did everything that they possibly could to keep to use their height advantage. Gasol abused Tyson Chandler in the third quarter. They tried to put Kevin Love on him. That's a mismatch 10 times out of 10. I don't care what you tell me about Kevin Love, how good of a rebounder he is. Kevin Love's a bad defensive player in my book. His height and lack of verticality, if that's even a word, it's a word now, doesn't equate to me being a good defensive player. He's a very good rebounder. He's Barkley-esque in his rebounding, but I don't think he's as good as Barkley. I think they're the same type of player, but I think Barkley was better. But, you couldn't put Barkley on Patrick Ewing and expect him to stop him. You can't put Kevin Love on Pau Gasol and expect him to stop Pau Gasol. But they got enough out of Durant, out of LeBron. Kobe Bryant had a big putback in the second half. Chris Paul made some huge plays at the end of the game. So they got enough offensively to counteract what Spain was doing. And they held Spain to no three-pointers in the second half, which is very impressive, considering Navarro and Sergio Yul were going off in the first half from downtown. You look at, what Spain for the game was 7 of 19, but they were 0-4 in the second half from downtown. You look at what they got out of Navarro, 21 points, 14 came in the second half. But a bad game from Calderon if you're Spain. 17 minutes, no points, one assist, two rebounds, a 1-to-1 assist-to-turnover ratio. 22 minutes out of Serge Ibaka, I thought it was really good. 12 points and 9 rebounds. Only had one block, though. But the big problem came with Marc Gasol sitting on the bench. He only played 17 minutes. He only played 17 minutes and scored 17 points. Rudy Fernandez, I thought, had a good game. 14.6 rebounds. I think he's going back overseas to play. He's not going to be in the NBA this year, which is fine. I agree with what Doc Rivers said in the game, or Doc Collins said he's not. He's a better international player than he is a NBA player. On the American side, pretty even scoring outside of Durant. 19 for LeBron, 17 for Kobe, 11 for Chris Paul. Tyson Chandler, 2 points, one rebound, only played 9 minutes. I thought Kevin Love had a big game, 9 points and nine rebounds. Did have four fouls. Everybody had four fouls of teams. Gasol had four fouls. Rudy Fernandez fouled out. LeBron had four fouls. Carmelo had four fouls. Off game for Carmelo, 8 points, five rebounds, three assists. A nice all-around game. But the Americans, the reason they won this game was 41% from the three-point line. They were 15 of 37 from the three-point line. They took more threes. They doubled the amount of threes they took this year compared to 2008, where they took about, I think it was 17 or maybe 20 a game. This year they averaged 35 threes attempted a game. And you saw sometimes where they fell against Nigeria and then it just becomes a onslaught. And then the games where they don't fall, like the games against Lithuania, where all of a sudden you're now in a fight. They fell enough yesterday where they were able to win the game. You know, Kevin Durant, 5 of 13 from the three-point line, 9 of 10 from the free throw line. They went 24 of 31 from the free throw line. If you take away Durant's 9 out of 10, that means they shot 15 for 21 from the foul line, which is close to maybe 70%. It's just they didn't shoot very well at all. And, you know, they got just enough offensively from Durant and LeBron to survive the game, which is all you really want. It doesn't matter how you win, as long as you win. I think sometimes people get worried. Like the spread going into the game was the U.S. plus 21.5 favorites. I don't understand that at all. It to me doesn't make sense that they were that big of a favorite, because I think Spain is a good team. I think Spain's a very good team. So that kind of, I think sometimes people get a little too worked up with, oh, they're the U.S. This isn't 20 years ago where they should be beating teams by 30 points a game. The international game has improved to the point where you can see these games. I mean, there's Last year, Spain had Gasol, Fernandez, Gasol, Calderon, Ibaka, and don't forget Ricky Rubio. That's six NBA players they had on NBA rosters last year, and six, five will still be on NBA rosters next year. So, you know, Lithuania had Montiejūnas and Kleiza. Both NBA players. You look at Russia, Kirilenko was an NBA player. Mozgov's an NBA player. Argentina, obviously, with the four legends, with, you know, five now. Prigioni's going to be in the NBA next year. So there's NBA talent on these other teams. Even Nigeria had, you know, Ike Diagu and Al-Farouq Aminu. Those are two NBA players. The NBA game is growing internationally, and more international, better international players are going to the NBA. It's not like it was 10 years ago where Nicolas Skidishvili was being drafted third overall and didn't do anything in the NBA. Or Darko Milicic, who didn't become what everybody assumed he was, and that deal that Joe Dumars, that move Joe Dumars made to draft Darko over Carmelo, really in hindsight, not even hindsight, I said it when it happened, that it was, was a stupid move. You don't draft Darko Milicic over Carmelo Anthony. You just don't do it. And now look at it. Yeah, when they made the draft, his team won a championship and went back to to another title and played in the Eastern Conference Finals the next year and the year after that. But that's like the Packers not drafting Aaron Rodgers because they already had Brett Favre. They already had this ready-made team. Aaron Rodgers, oh, he's just going to sit. He didn't do anything. He didn't do anything for 3 years. Well, it worked out pretty well for the Packers. I'm of the belief you can never have enough talent. And you take a guy like Carmelo, who at 19 already won an NBA college championship and was obviously the second or third best player in that draft coming out. To me, it makes no sense to not draft him, play him off the bench. I mean, are you telling me you would have rather have had Corliss Williamson or Darvin Ham on that 2004 and 2005 Pistons team over Carmelo Anthony, who could have at least been the sixth man off the bench and could have spelt Hamilton or Tayshaun Prince? Silly. To me, it was silly then, it's silly now, and instead of having a 28-year-old Carmelo Anthony to build around on that team, they've got Greg Monroe and Andre Drummond and Brandon Knight. So, hey, Dumars made the move, and no one killed him really badly when they won the championship. And I mean, to me, it was silly then, it's silly now, and that team's going nowhere this year. You know, they'll be lucky to win 35, maybe get to 40 games, but you're not going to see the Detroit Pistons be anything close to a team that can or may challenge for that division, especially with Indiana in that division, who's probably going to win it with the Bulls dropping a notch without Derrick Rose, and probably the Bulls sitting, you know, the Bucks will be a decent team in that division too. But I'm not, you know, hey, listen, it was 9 years ago. Let's not continue to harp on how bad of a drafter Joe Dumars has been. I mean, it's not like he's had 9 years afterwards where he's made some horrible picks, but Austin Day, anybody? Not me. No thanks. Obviously, the other big NBA news, which kind of actually trumped the Olympics for a bit, kind of like when Shaq signed with the Lakers in 96, kind of became the talk of the Olympics, was the Lakers' acquisition of Dwight Howard. Now, you want to give Mitch Kupchak the Executive of the Year award, that's fine with me. You know, anytime you're able to turn Ramon Sessions and Derek Fisher and Andrew Bynum into Dwight Howard and Steve Nash, that's solid. That's better than solid. That's fantastic. I mean, the starting five right now of Nash, Kobe, Gasol, Meta World Peace, and Dwight Howard makes them a 50-55 win team in my book. I don't want to hear Chris Sheridan saying, listen, the over-under is 70, because that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. They're not going to win 70 games. No one's – you're talking about one team – you know, when teams win 62 games, you know, the Bulls won, what was it, 58 games? Or 61 games 2 years ago, that's a fantastic team. That's a legendary team most times in the NBA. You know, most teams are happy with a 45-50 win season. But to say 70 wins when your bench is Antoine Jameson, Jordan Hill, Steve Blake, and Jody Meeks, I don't think that's a good bench. It's better than what their bench was last year. Absolutely better than it was last year. But I don't see that as a, you know, do you trust Steve Blake to handle the point guard duties when Nash is on the bench? You know Kobe's shooting 25 times a game. I mean, it's just what happens. Nash is, I just said they're going to be 50 to 55 wins. I think they're going to be the second seed in the Western Conference, and I think they're going to be right there with Oklahoma City. I think the Western Conference is funny because you have the three division winners. You're going to have Oklahoma City, you're going to have the Lakers, and you're going to have San Antonio, I think at least. Because I don't think you're going to see Dallas be there. I mean, Memphis maybe can jump up and challenge San Antonio for that division. Because if they don't, you're looking at Memphis, and you're looking at the Clippers, and you're looking at Denver as being, you know, 4, 5, and 6 for the next 3 years. I think some point someone's going to take San Antonio's spot. It's obviously not going to be the Hornets. It's not going to be Houston, because I think they're going to be terrible. It's not going to be Dallas. I think Dallas is going to be bad. Memphis, they finished 9 games behind the Spurs last year. They don't have O.J. Mayo anymore off the bench, but, I mean, they really didn't use O.J. Mayo last year anyway. So I think that with training camp starting and getting ready, you know, we're 2 weeks till the start of September, so you're talking another maybe October 1st, things start to heat up. So you're talking another 6, 7 weeks, and we're talking NBA basketball again, getting ready for the season. So to me, it's never too early to talk basketball. If anybody else has any things they want to say and want to get off their chest, you can hit me up in the next 10 minutes, 760-283-0846 is the telephone number. You know, the Lakers won 41 games last year and won the division. Can the Clippers challenge them? I mean, I think they're close. I kind of like the Clippers team, especially if Blake Griffin's healthy. But listen, the Lakers are going to be probably the number 2 seed in the Western Conference. You're going to have Oklahoma City at number 1. I think Denver made out really well in that deal because they turned terrible contracts into Andre Iguodala, who fits that team perfectly. I think he's going to be a total stud for that type of offense. When you talk about George Karl, who wants to get up and run and get out on the fast break and, you know, shoot threes and kind of not worry about defense if he doesn't have to. I mean, they gave up more points last year than the Charlotte Bobcats did, which is saying something. You know, Sacramento obviously gave up the most points out of everybody. They gave up 105 points a game last year. That's insane. In the Eastern Conference, I mean, Andrew Bynum's going to make Philadelphia a better team. They have no Lou Williams. They don't have Iguodala now. I mean, they tried to get rid of Iguodala for the last 3 years. So you can't really say anything too much about them, you know, missing Iguodala, because clearly they don't think they're going to be missing much. You know, you sign Nick Young to a 1-year deal. You expect Nick Young to show some sort of consistency, even though he never has shown any consistency. Thaddeus Young, Drew Holiday, you know, I think they'll be a good team. I think they'll be right there in terms of in terms of how they mesh. I mean, Jason Richardson, I think, can play well. He's obviously going to be the starting two guard. You know, Holiday, Richardson, do they keep Thaddeus Young on the bench, or do they finally put him into the starting lineup? Obviously, Bynum's going to be your center. I mean, Spencer Hawes is probably coming off the bench. Obviously, you're going to start Evan Turner, so maybe they'll go a small lineup and go Holiday, Turner, Richardson, and then, you know, maybe Darrell Wright and Bynum at the 4 and 5. I kind of like Darrell Wright. I think Darrell Wright's actually a pretty nice steal for them in terms of what he can do in terms of being a small to a big in any type of rotation. So, but I'm not, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what Doug Collins does with that roster, because I think that's a pretty good lineup if you want to keep Thaddeus Young on the bench. You know, Darrell Wright's a taller player. Maybe you can sneak him in at the 4 and put Bynum at the 5. Do you want to start Kwame Brown at the 4 and Bynum at the 5? Hawes at the 4 and go with a big front court to counteract the kind of smallishness? I mean, the good thing is that Richardson and Turner are bigger guards. So you're able to really do more in terms of how I think it gives them a little flexibility. Obviously, LaVoy Allen played really well last year in the playoffs. I mean, that's a guy you might even want to start if you're Philadelphia, and then have a bench of Nick Young, Thaddeus Young, Darrell Wright. Arnett Moultrie is a big body that they drafted out of Mississippi State. So, listen, we'll obviously get into it more as the season goes along, as we get closer and closer to the season. But I'm not quite sure what Philadelphia is going to do in terms of what they get and what their starting five is. Boston, I thought, made some improvements this year. They got old quickly on the wing. So what they did is they drafted Chris Joseph. They signed Courtney Lee in a sign-and-trade. And they signed Jason Terry, who I think coming off the bench is going to be really good. Obviously, you still have Rondo, Pierce, Garnett, Bass, and I guess Bradley is going to be your starting five. Jared Sullinger is going to back up the 4. Maybe Fab Mello, if he's ready, is going to back up the 5. I don't really know what you can expect out of Fab Mello. I just don't. I've watched Fab Mello for both of his 2 years at Syracuse, and he was very raw offensively. He's very good defensively. But I just don't know what the time is going to be. You're going to have Garnett play the 5. You're going to have Bass at the 4. You know, Deontay Christmas from Temple really surprised them at the Summer League. Chris Joseph's obviously going to see some playing time at the 3. Wilcox is still there. So, I mean, it's interesting to see what the Celtics do with their rotation as well. Because it's now very young at the shooting guard with Bradley and Courtney Lee compared to what it was. Now you're expecting Jason Terry, who was spotty last year in terms of how he played, spotty. And then you're looking at Courtney Lee and Avery Bradley to replace some of what Ray Allen was. Now, they're probably better than what Ray Allen was. Obviously, Ray Allen was hurt last year and is now hanging out in Miami, which is just deadly for the rest of the league. It's not impossible, but it's deadly. You know, Ray's maybe got another year or two left in him, but he's definitely a guy that is going to benefit from playing with LeBron James greatly. But that's part of what is going to make it so important is you had to worry about Ray Allen. I'm not quite sure you have to worry about Courtney Lee or Jason Terry or Bradley on the same level. Obviously, you're not going to leave them wide open, but I don't think you need to worry to the, you know, worry about them and whatnot. So, I just don't think it's a something to where, you know, you have to worry about, oh, where's Jason Terry on the court? Where's Jason Terry? You know, you just play your defense. And, you know, Garnett and Pierce are older. They're the older statesmen on the team. With Terry both all in their mid-30s. Who knows how many more minutes they've got in their tank. And it'll be interesting to see if Doc kind of massages their minutes a little bit at some points in the season to kind of save them for the playoffs. But I don't think they're the clear-cut favorite in the Atlantic. I think Philly can give them trouble. I think the Knicks can give them trouble. I think the Nets will obviously be there, although I think the Nets will be further down. I think the Atlantic's going to get four teams into the playoffs, looking at it right now, which would then leave one out of the Southeast, because I don't think Washington or Orlando, or maybe Atlanta will get in. I do think the Central is going to get two teams in. I think the Bulls will get in, and I think Indiana will get in, although they'll flip-flop spots. I don't think Chicago's going to win the division. Maybe Milwaukee will sneak in. But it'll be a battle for the bottom of that Eastern Conference. Atlanta, Milwaukee, New Jersey, Washington. Those are all teams that you would expect to make the fight for the bottom of the playoffs. And if you're the Knicks, Sixers, Boston, Indiana, you're fighting to get that number two seed behind the Heat. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And I think, you know, we'll obviously talk more as it gets closer and closer. Obviously, as the weeks go on, we'll get more into football as everybody starts their second preseason game. Tonight will be the first preseason game for the Cowboys and Raiders. After that, Saturday, you have Giants and Jets. So next week, we'll discuss all that in depth and look forward to the NFL season and obviously continue to talk more NBA and whatever else is in the sports world. We're out of time right now. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. So hopefully everybody has a good week. Tune in next week. We'll see everybody right here, same time. Take care.